Well, we're yet to see the details of the deal between the government and Labor, which would allow the passage of laws to give police and investigators access to encrypted messages. That leaves one more day in this sitting of Parliament to get the laws through after the government claimed there was an urgent need to do so before Christmas. One of the top cyber officials in Canberra, Alastair McGibbon, head of the Australian Cyber Security Centre at the Australian Signals Directorate, used an interview on AM this morning to push back against critics who cite privacy concerns and fear big risks to cyber security.
I don't think you're going to have a rush of dozens of agencies at the door of big tech companies. But what I do think it will have is reasonable discussions between, frankly, often US-based tech companies that for years have seen themselves beyond the reach, not just of our law, but our social expectations. And nothing in this is unreasonable. Nothing in this is building systemic weaknesses. That's one of the other arguments that's been put. This is about breaking encryption. The bill is rightfully called Access and Assistance. It's not called the Encryption Bill. It's not about breaking encryption. It's about helping agencies get access to and assistance from these tech companies.
Alastair McGibbon this morning on AM. Many experts in the area remain unconvinced about those claims, though. We're hoping to speak shortly to Senator Jordan Steele-John. He's the Greens spokesman on digital rights, if Senate business allows. But first, Rhianna Pfefferkorn is a cryptography fellow at the Stanford Centre for Internet and Society at Stanford University Law School. She gave extensive evidence to the parliamentary committee here that assessed the government's proposed legislation. We spoke earlier and I began by asking if she believes the bill can allow law enforcement access to the messages of criminals without creating systemic weaknesses for everyday users.
No, I don't believe so. Even if you try to overtly define what a systemic weakness might be, there are always going to be unanticipated ways that weakness that was not anticipated to have been systemic might prove to be systemic. Or in addition, if a provider covered by the bill is compelled to create what is supposedly a one-off bit of access to a device or to a communication service, the next time that they receive a notice from an agency, they're not going to just be throwing out and then rebuilding the solution every time. So what originated as being a one-off for one device, one phone, one person's chats is going to effectively end up being systemic because it's going to be reused again and again by that provider.
What opportunities then do these laws present for criminals and others, including governments, who may be inclined to engage in cybercrime?
The problem with this bill that I think everyone needs to understand is that it's not going to allow agencies' guaranteed ability to catch the very criminals and terrorists and pedophiles, etc., that it's supposedly aimed at, in that it will weaken the security of everyday law-abiding users' devices, because everyday law-abiding agencies, everyday law-abiding manufacturers and app makers, etc., may choose to comply with this law, but the services that are used by criminals, that are used by terrorists, might not necessarily comply. Terrorists write their own encrypted chat apps. There are open source applications and open source even operating systems such as Linux that will be impossible to get any compliance from them with a notice under this bill to re-engineer their devices and their services. So what we'll end up with is a two-tiered system of security where law-abiding Australians will have poorer security than the very people who seek to prey upon them. And because of the weaknesses in security that this bill is going to mandate providers build into their products and services, those backdoors will be found and will be exploited by cybercriminals, by hackers, by rogue enemy governments seeking to get information on Australians and on Australian agencies, government officials, etc.
I mean, the government has said repeatedly, no backdoors. There will be no backdoors. They keep saying it over and over and over again. Do you see that as mere assertion on their part then?
I think that the wording of backdoors is a difficult one to define. And you've seen, I think, that the agencies from ASIO, etc., have really resisted being pinned down on exactly what sort of techniques and what sort of assistance might be compelled under the bill. But one thing that they have said in addition to that, they've said we're not even asking for a back door, we're walking in through the front door. So when you have this kind of terminology, I don't know that that's any more reassuring to say we're being very upfront about the fact that we're going to require companies doing business in Australia to provide access. You won't necessarily know if it's your particular device, your particular copy of an app that may have been undermined for the government. But however that term is used, backdoor, I think that trying to assert that this bill won't compel the creation of backdoors is misleading.
Can big tech companies create a way for law enforcement to view what is on a suspect's phone or computer screen remotely without compromising apps or services? So I guess enabling them to break into but not break the actual encryption.
This is already a technique that is already in use, and it can sometimes be called equipment interference. That's what they call it in the UK. It's also known as lawful hacking or government hacking. And that's where law enforcement makes use of existing vulnerabilities in software and hardware products. Those sorts of bugs will always occur, no matter how well engineered a product is, no matter how good the people it has developing its software, developing its hardware. Governments have been and will continue to use these existing vulnerabilities in order to gain access remotely to somebody's device. But what this bill would do is to compel the intentional creation of new vulnerabilities rather than just permitting the exploitation of existing vulnerabilities. And I really think that Australian companies should be incentivized to provide the best possible security that they possibly can to their users in Australia and elsewhere, rather than being compelled to create new bugs in their products.
Many of the companies that the Australian government would be looking to compel to act under this law are US-based. You've done an analysis of how this bill would work with US laws. What are your conclusions?
I have some strong doubts about whether Australian agencies would successfully be able to compel the sort of technical assistance that's contemplated through the technical assistance notices and technical capability notices in the United States from US-based providers. First of all, the voluntary request, the technical assistance requests, would be flat out barred by American law, so you won't get any sort of voluntary compliance from a US provider. In addition, under current international agreements, there isn't right now any method for serving these kinds of notices on U.S. providers. And even under the new United States Cloud Act, which enables the entry into bilateral agreements for law enforcement agencies in the United States and in another country, I also don't believe that even if Australia were to enter into an agreement, a bilateral treaty under the Cloud Act with the United States, that technical capability notices and technical assistance notices could successfully be served through that agreement or through the existing mutual legal assistance treaty that's already in effect between the two countries.
So that basically sounds like the legal obstacles will make this bill null and void in that context?
I think that there will be significant hurdles under international law and under United States federal law that will preclude agencies from being successful in serving notices on US providers.
You've also said to the Australian Parliamentary Committee that this bill will give cover to human rights abuses by oppressive governments. How is that?
The sorts of broad powers, particularly to be exercised in secret and without adequate judicial oversight, are the stuff of dreams for oppressive governments. And Australia, well, nominally a Western-style democracy, is giving cover to those governments to pass a law that's similar to the bill. And when they use it to investigate crimes in their country that are not crimes in Australia, which might be making fun of the king, of the saying something bad about the royal family, something that, of course, would be at odds with a free speech tradition in a Western democracy, Australia's bill will allow those governments in oppressive countries to point to Australia and say, look, there's another government in Australia that's done exactly the same thing that we want to do here. So where, you know, what foot do you have to stand on now to object?
Rhianna Pfefferkorn, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Rhianna Pfefferkorn is a cryptography fellow at the Stanford Center for Internet and Society at Stanford University Law School.